All right, so I'm going to tweet right now. I can't believe Deion Sanders works here. All right, so I gotta interrupt this episode because we obviously have big news happening and it's big positive news, which if anybody's been listening to this thing, it's like few and far between around here. So big news yesterday. No. Yes, big news yesterday. What is time at this point when prime time is on your network? But anyway, so Deion Sanders coming to Barstool. He's going to join our pod next week. So we'll talk to him about how it came together, what he's going to do, everything and anything. Deion, it's been a wild couple weeks. I've spent more time in Texas than I've ever spent in Texas in my life. I loved it. I love everything Deion. I love everything prime country. I'm all about prime time. I'm just so happy he's here. So just going to lead the episode off with a one fucking good thing. And my one fucking good thing right now is Deion Sanders. So the reason he's my one fucking good thing is, one, I'm just so happy he's at Barstool. I'm not happy about it though, just because it happened. It was funny. I talked to the New York Post yesterday and they kept referencing it as a deal. And I was like, oh, that's so insulting. It's not a deal. Like, it didn't come together as a deal. It doesn't feel like a deal. Like, what I'm so happy about and fired up for is that there is this, like, magnanimous, larger-than-life entertainer, like this legend on the football field. I think he's been a legend since the football field. But it's someone who's essentially been cut up into sound bites or controlled by a network and has only been able to exist by saying, you know, exist in 45 second clips and in a show and a vision that's somebody else's. And my experience with Deion is he has a lot to say. He has a lot of vision. He has a lot of opinion. He has so much energy. And I like being around it. I've seen it in the last 12 hours of what he's brought to us and just what he brings to everything he does. So Deion Sanders is my one fucking good thing today. And my preview is what, you know, what all we'll talk about next week. So shout out Deion Sanders and primetime and Barstool Sports. All right. So back to the regularly scheduled episode of the normal things we were going to talk about today, other than primetime and neon Deion. All right. This is the Token CEO podcast. Today is Thursday, August 13th. This is episode 77. So this episode today is about agency. So we're interviewing two sports agents. One is a gentleman named Adi Attar, who's Conor McGregor's agent. And the second is a fantastic woman named Kim Maielli. So Adi has been with Conor for a long time. Kim is the first female NFL agent to have a top two draft pick. That person was Saquon Barkley. Anyways, the two of them go into what makes a great agent, how they deal with talent, how they think about controversy on and off the field, how they got to where they are in their career. And then, as always, I have to ask, why do agents suck? And do sports agents suck the same way media agents can suck? So without any further ado, let's get into it. You could have a steam train.
Hey,
what's up?
What's going on?
Hey, I thought we were going all audio, so I apologize for
no, we are only audio. Okay, yeah, cool. Don't worry, we're only audio. Cool. How's it going?
Good, just sweating here, you know, getting nervous. It's a big boss here, you know.
All right, so Adi, we'll cover, this will be quick, it's easy. Is there anything you don't want to cover or you do want to cover? Like, you'll tell me.
Listen, we'll just roll with it, and, you know?
All right.
This is your thing.
This is my thing. Yeah. I don't know, I'm figuring out this thing. All right, so give the listeners of this pod, like, who are you and what do you do?
Sure. My name is Adi Attar. I'm founder, CEO of Paradigm Sports Management. We are a multifaceted sports and entertainment platform with our, you know, core business being athlete representation.
Who's your favorite?
It's like having a kid, you know, you can't have a favorite. Everybody's like, well, how do you not have a favorite? Well, it just works. You know, you grow into that.
Sometimes this one's a favorite. Sometimes that one's a favorite.
They all have their moments, right?
So, yeah, they do. Yeah. All right. So you're best known for being Conor McGregor's agent, manager, business partner, friend. Tell us that story. Like, how'd you two come together? What makes it so special? When does he drive you nuts? When do you drive him nuts? Like, give us that.
Well, you know, Conor and I have been working together for almost a decade now. You know, so it's been quite the ride from the beginning of, you know, first signing him when nobody, you know, really outside of the sport of MMA and even within the sport of MMA didn't know who this special man was at the time, young man was at the time. And, you know, we started out with huge dreams, dreams that scared everybody, including ourselves. And it's been quite the ride. He's such an amazing athlete, achieving, you know, he's the first to achieve so many different things. And he's really the guy that sets the bar as it relates to combat sports, not just mixed martial arts. So it's been an amazing ride with him getting to the point of winning his first title at 145, becoming the first double champ, as we call him, champ, trademark included,
to champ.
In the sport and holding two belts when he captured that belt with the first event ever in the state of New York, as you probably remember, at the Garden. And then, you know, being able to go from there and mobilizing all parties to make Mayweather McGregor happen, which everybody was counting us out and saying it would never happen. To even then parlaying it and growing the business empire that we're continuing to grow, which is led by, you know, our amazing Whiskey Proper 12 and other ventures that we have and forthcoming that are yet to be announced. So, you know, being his manager, being, you know, his friend, being his partner has been an amazing ride. And the one thing I will say that I'm so proud is that I constantly see him grow. And it's not easy to do, particularly under the microscope that he's under. Being such an iconic figure that he is, and also being unapologetically who he is, right? Mm-hmm. And so at times that puts you in a situation, I know as you can appreciate, you're not always going to appease everybody and there's going to be bumps in the road. But, you know, one of the things that we've done a good job is knowing who we are, knowing our truth, and always looking forward, right? And if you could stay focused on, you know, I always say, look at your North Star and don't lose sight of it at the end of the day, no matter where you're lost in the woods or the wilderness, you'll find your way back, and we've continued to do that. So it's been an honor, and I truly consider him a family to me. He's a loyal individual, fiercely loyal individual, and I just couldn't be more proud of what he's accomplished and what we're continuing to accomplish as a team.
How did you meet him? Like, how did you get connected?
So this is an interesting story.
Are you the same? What's the age difference between you?
About 10 years.
Older.
Do I look younger?
You look great.
Thank you, Erica. Appreciate the love, you know? But yes, I am, believe it or not, I am the 10-year senior. Hard to believe, but yeah, so it's, you know, he's a little bro to me, right?
Okay, so how'd you meet him?
We were introduced, someone first suggested I take a look at this new fighter that's coming into the UFC named Conor McGregor, and he was a European champion, and he had won all these amazing accolades at that level as well that people, you know, in the mainstream really don't know about, but he had accomplished a lot in the sport, and he was ready to take the next step. And so someone put me on him and said, look, you gotta look at this talent. And, you know, when we're scouting an athlete, you're looking at, you know, not necessarily the entertainment variables, but more so athletic variables, height, weight, speed, you know, explosiveness, you know, win-loss percentage, et cetera, et cetera. And when we scouted him, he was an amazing athlete. I mean, he had all the tools, and he was just a phenomenal talent. And, you know, upon watching more tape, we were sold on the athletic ability. And then you saw little interviews, because at that time there wasn't too many, but you saw this amazing charisma that, is, you know, you can't teach that, right? And so that was how I was first put on to Connor. And then,
why did people think that you were the right person for him?
At the time I came into the sport of MMA about 9.5 years ago, right before the first major television deal. And my experience prior to that came from the NFL agency world. I at that point just developed as an entrepreneur. I said, look, I want to build a platform. I want to focus on high growth sports and high growth markets. And I want to take those athletes and then help not only maximize their careers in sports, but then build enterprise around them. Yeah. Build brands around them. And so I had this really ambitious vision that at the time people were laughing at me. And again, the dream scared me even, but I went for it. And MMA, I saw that opportunity. It was truly the fastest growing sport, and credit to the UFC for being the catalyst for what it was. And as a Southern California native, I understood it. It was kind of part of our sports fabric. And I played college football, so I was in and around these athletes when I was an athlete, and I was a fan. And so I saw it being an underserved market that I felt that I could come in and win. So I had signed some key fighters early on, like Chris Lytle. I signed Michael Bisping. And so I think by the time it got to Connor, I was doing a good job with Michael Bisping, and Michael was the pioneer of the sport in Europe. And so it was, he was still being courted by every other agency and look for us.
Yeah. So what was your pitch?
You have to differentiate, right? And for us as an agency, we're proud of the fact that we know how to match their work ethic. We know how to match their intensity. We have that never quit mentality. We always think outside the box. We don't just try to follow everybody, and we dare to do things that are differently and things that people say we can never do. And so I think that upon, pitching our service sets and differentiating from everybody else that he was listening to, I think we just clicked at that point in time. And I even said some things that, weren't necessarily, being subservient, right? I said some things that were against what he was thinking in the first meeting. And I think that the one thing I love about Connor is he wants to be challenged at the end of the day. And he doesn't, what's the point of creating a team of people that advise him that he trusts if he doesn't listen to them? And that's the biggest key.
Yeah, they're just a bunch of yes men.
That's it, And so I think that was how we met. And we did the first meeting over, I think, FaceTime, believe it or not.
Oh, you did. How long did it take you to get on a plane and go see him?
Believe it or not, I think it was, we signed first. We worked together for one fight initially. Yes. And I met him at that fight. And then from then on, it was like, okay, we're doing this full time together.
Okay. We're in.
We're in. And then it was constant. And now, Ireland, I consider is like almost a second home to me, which I love that country.
You must be pretty good on FaceTime.
Only without video. Only without video.
Yeah, I hear
video.
You. So I hear you.
You look younger, Yeah,
I hear you. Yeah. I thought you looked young, so it clearly is working
for
you.
Good, good.
Why do people think agents suck? I think agents suck 95% of the time.
It's a good question. I will tell you, when I was a collegiate athlete, we were told they sucked. They were snakes. They were this, they were that. And so you have this preconceived notion of what an agent is, right? And for me, even as an entrepreneur, I was told during my time in college, because I would always be the one, my recruiting class, I was able to, get
Where'd
a lot.
Where'd you play?
I played at UCLA. So I signed out of high school at UCLA.
What position?
Safety and linebacker.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. My recruiting class was number one in the country, and I got a lot of guys to come follow me. So then at that point in time, everybody's like, you're going to be an agent. I'm like, the preconceived notion of an agent was just recruiting at the time. But then, you're taught, oh, they're dangerous. Stay away from them, this and that. And so you have this mixed thoughts and emotions about what that role really is. And as I got into the business, and I really got into it because I learned that, it's a leadership role, right? And these athletes do need direction, not only with their career, but transitioning to their post-athletic identity and all these things that are very important. To me, as a son of the sport, not just a suit that loves sports, that just jumped into it. So I felt like I had a bigger purpose than most agents. And then once I got into it, I realized, well, I don't like necessarily being labeled an agent. And then in MMA, it's called a manager, which is synonymous
in terms of the roles.
So, yeah, I got two titles now, right? Yeah. But then I started developing my own identity. And I'm like, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. And the best, quote unquote, agent is really the best entrepreneurs that know not only how to maximize an athlete's sports career, but really build business and enterprise and help them transition smoothly into their post-athletic identity. And really, they really give a fuck, right, about what they're doing at the end of the day. So, you know, I think that it's like anything else. Things could be branded one way or another. And branding is also a big part of our business and what I do. So am I a brand builder? Am I, you know, what is the next name?
All those things.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's why agents have a bad name.
All right. Do you think it's deserved or not?
I think there's some really, really good agents out there. And I think that there's some really bad agents out there. So I've never been the one that tries to label a group, right? Because you're going to get a mixed bag of apples.
I think Connor is one of the most brilliant promoters I've ever seen. Like, he gets you to watch him. You cannot look away from that man. Like there are very few, I think Dave Portnoy has this, where you just cannot look away. You're like, why am I watching my 70th pizza review? But you can't stop watching. How do you partner with him on that? Like, how do you know when to let him run?
You got to
the running.
You know, and I've gotten to obviously watch the amazing growth you guys have had, and Dave had this vision that nobody believed in, and what he's built has been amazing. And when you came on and what you had to do, I mean, look, you have to let them be who they are. You can't. Otherwise, you take away the authenticity of it all, right? Authenticity is really what drives the engagement and the interest. And I think that if you take away the authenticity, you lose that. You lose that magic, right? And so I've never once tried to tell him not to be who he is. Now, when he makes mistakes, am I in there trying to help him think about things differently and getting different perspective? Because at the end of the day, he's still human, right? And we all make mistakes.
Yeah, people forget that people are human. People
absolutely. This is not something where we go in there and things are scripted. It's not that ever, right? It's just about us helping them become the best versions of themselves. It's going back to kind of parenting, right? Which client is my favorite? I approach it like I approach my parenting. I just try to put everything in me into them to help them be the best version of themselves professionally and personally. And if I've had that type of impact on Connor and all of our clients, then I've done my job.
And how do you think about crisis? Like, we tend to look at crisis as a couple things. Like, one, crisis is opportunity. I think a pending crisis is always worse than a current crisis. Mm. That's, at least in my mind, I feel that there's a big difference. And then it's also like crisis is in the eye of the beholder. But how do you guys think about that? And controversy, to be honest with you.
Sure.
How do you think about that?
Well, look, for me, I try not to forecast crisis, right? And I think that just through my own personal life, I was born in Baghdad at the start of a war. I immigrate. I've always been in crisis mode, so to speak. So I try not to.
Yeah, that's just life.
It's just life. It's just like ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And you kind of got to be present in the moment for it all. And I think if you're present, then that crisis is something that you'll be able to handle without it overwhelming you, right? And that emotion of crisis is not necessarily something that's going to get you off your game and get you off your North Star. So I think that crisis is something that you have to just be ready for. Crisis is something that you learn in sports. You're not always up, you know, 5-0 or 3-0 to none. You know,
they get a touchdown in the last 2 minutes.
Doesn't matter. That's it. You lost. You could be winning a fight for all 5 rounds, and all of a sudden the bell, the buzzer, you're knocked out or submitted or something happens. If I were to use MMA as an analogy, so crisis is a lot like sports. Crisis is a lot like life. You just have to be present. You got to be ready for the entire game. You got to be present for the entire game. Otherwise, you're going to get your ass kicked.
And how do you think about preparation and being present? And, you know, I think part of it's just being strong. It's kind of what you said earlier, which is that, you know, what I like about Connor is Connor knows who Connor is. Because he so truly harnesses who he is, like warts and all, love him, hate him, like he's in your face. I think that that's important now. Not necessarily saying that everybody needs to be in your face, but you need to know who you are. If you don't know who you are and things go sideways, then you're really in trouble. So how do you help? How do you help prepare not just for crazy things to happen, but for good things to happen and the North Star of it all? Like how do you prepare and manage your way to the North Star?
Yeah. So it's interesting because, you know, one of the things I love about Connor is he knows who he is, but he also knows that we're constantly learning and growing, right? If we're the person we were 10 years ago today, I don't think we're going to keep winning, right? Because we haven't evolved. We haven't learned. You have to be transformative. And I always say, if you and I, it's just like sports. Again, I always come back to sports.
No, that's
analogy.
Great. We love that.
But if you and I played a game against each other, I believe you played lacrosse too. So if you and I played a game and I didn't score a goal on you the first time we faced each other, but I started to study you. And then the next time we played, you did exactly the same thing. I'm going to expose your weakness and I'm finally going to get that goal on you. Right. So it's the same thing in life. And the first thing I would say is the client has to be willing to be advised. There's no point of me doing what I do if we're constantly just fighting and there's no breakthrough. The fights are going to be natural, right? In terms of the disagreements on views or whatever, and you have to deal with them. But how do you get through to someone that they say, like, look, what's he wasting his time telling me this if it's not for, we have a mutual interest, right? Our interests are aligned. So if our interests are aligned, why is he telling me this? If our interests are not aligned, I get it, right? But if our interests are fully aligned.
Have you fired a client?
I have. And I will tell you, like, if someone doesn't listen, we try to do everything in our power to put our whole heart and soul into something, right? And it comes to a point where we can't do it. We constantly try to warn them. But if they don't listen, what's the point? What is no point of us doing what we do if, like, we're chasing someone for weeks or months at a time, trying to get them to do what's in their best interest? And by virtue of what we do, it'll be in our best interest as well, right? But if they don't listen, what's the point? What are we doing here, right? And so
you're wasting
that time. You have to be genuine and authentic in what you do, but that also doesn't mean you just stick around and what are you teaching them at the end of the day, right? So we're failing on our own purpose.
I think a lot of agents aren't into that. Like I would say I think there are partners and there are agents. Like, forget the job title that you have. Like, your job is to grow a person, build a platform around them, help them capitalize on every opportunity possible, help them achieve their full maximum potential, right? Like, that's like probably what you would say your job is. I think the things where I get frustrated with the quote unquote agent is, one is, I think they all look and sound alike and they're not deeply invested in their partner's project. Like, I had an agent come in here the other day, or virtual, but like talking to me about this, that, or the other thing. And I was like, well, hey, have you listened to that person's latest podcast? Like, they launched something new. Have you listened to it? And the answer was no. And I was like, you know what? Like, if I were him, I'd be bullshit. So I think that there's something that, like, the factory approach to agency is a problem. I think that's not appreciated by the people who have agents nor people who buy from agents. I think that's an issue. I think the second issue is, I like when people are upfront and honest and clear on what they want to do. Sometimes I think that the athlete or the personality or whomever it may be uses the agent as a crutch to not have conversations that they don't want to have, or that they use it as they are sloughing off the interest. Like, they don't actually have an interest. And so, you know, I always can tell if someone's interested in coming to Barstool. If I only ever talk to the agent, I'm like, forget it. This isn't going to work because you're not invested in me and I'm not getting a chance to be invested in you. I think when we talk to the talent or the personality or the athlete or whomever, and then the agent comes along and helps makes it happen, like, that's fine. Like, I get that. But I think that's one of the hard things, is that it's more the exception to the rule, that level of partnership.
I think you may be right. I think in more mature markets too, there's complacency has developed, right? Because these industries are established. This position as an agent is established. Even what they make, how they negotiate has been established and collectively bargained or what have you, right? So the job has not has become easier in certain respects, right? Than the old days where you're having to push sport forward, not only your own clients' objectives.
Yeah, you're having to build the category.
But you're having to build something which creates a lot more challenges, but yet a lot more opportunity, right? So I think that, you know, one of the things you have to do is you have to eat, sleep, and breathe what you're doing. You have to breathe, and sleep everything that your clients are doing. And you have to have a finger on the pulse that is going to go over and be over and above what you promised that said client. For us too, it's capacity. We've done, like for me, after Mayweather McGregor, it's like you could take all this money and pocket it or run. But that's not building a business. I'd rather, you know, we've invested in our infrastructure. It's like gone are the days where people just try to attach to me to want to be a part of something that were really cancer for the culture and the business. And now we identify the right talent that we need from a capacity standpoint, from a service offering standpoint, to make sure that we're trying to get better today than we were yesterday and tomorrow better than we are today at everything we do, not just for Conor McGregor, for all of our clients.
Yep, that makes sense. So what's next for you? What's next for Conor? Like, what's next for Paradigm? Like, what's coming up?
Listen, this is our 10-year anniversary, which is, you know.
Congrats.
I you know, as you know, it's like you blink and you're like, what? You know, and so it's been quite the ride. And with everything going on in the world, it's been actually an amazing experience for us because it's forced me to stay home. This is the most I've been home with my family, which is really good. But then it's forced like our team to really dive into the tech stack that we were already using and gain efficiencies and then even like start to ideate things and try to think of the future in the next 10 years. And one of those is a rebrand we're going to announce here soon, which I'm excited about. That kind of tells our story holistically of where we've been, where we are, where we're going. And then we have several other things coming up, not only for our existing brands, but forthcoming ventures and continue to grow within the spaces we're already in, continue to enter new spaces and scale the business and just keep having fun, man. Like, and not trying to do it like everybody else and just going for your own dream and creating your own reality.
I love it. All right. Well, thanks for Adi for joining. I appreciate it.
Erica, thank you so much for having me. Keep kicking butt and I look forward to seeing you guys again soon.
Okay, cool. Be well. We'll talk to you soon.
Cheers. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Could have a big difference going up and down all around the bends. You could have a fun car.
Okay, so I've been on a massive Peter Gabriel kick. I just can't get enough of Peter Gabriel. Like, I was thinking about it with everything going on in politics, and I don't know if anybody remembers you. I don't think anybody who listens to this remembers because you're all too young, but the Land of Confusion video. Do you guys remember the Land of Confusion video? Oh, it's fucking amazing. Like, it was like Nancy Reagan and Ronald Reagan and the Queen of England. It was all almost puppets laid out. It was a very, very not controversial, but it was a notorious video. I would say it was in the 90s, 80s or 90s. We should find out when that is, but it was an incredible video. So anyways, I've been listening to Land of Confusion. I love Sledgehammer. I like to listen to my music loud. The best way I do it is with my Bose 700 headphones. So the Bose 700 headphones are great if you're listening to podcasts like this one. Sorry, the audio is a little rough today. I forgot my microphone. Or if you're listening to your music, I like to listen to my music pretty loud, which is why I generally can't hear anything. The great thing about the Bose 700s is that they have 11 levels of noise cancellation. So if you need to be hearing what's going on around you, you can. Or if you just want to block out the world and listen to your podcast, or listen to your music, you can do so. They've got signature active EQ. I don't even know what that means, but it sounds pretty high tech. And then they have great bass levels, which I think matters a lot in music. So whether you're listening at low volumes and you want to have a sense of what's happening around you, or you just want to crank it up, the Bose 700 is an awesome, very high quality product. Bose stands for excellence in music, and I found that to be 100% true. So if you listen to this podcast, you can get $40 off your Bose 700 headphones if you go to bose.com/barstool. So go to bose.com/barstool to save $40 off the Bose 700s, and check out Peter Gabriel if you haven't already. Okay, so up next is Kim.
Show me around your food cage.
How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Not too much. Just living the dream here in New York City during a pandemic.
Oh, it's gross, isn't it?
Awful.
It's awful. Have you been in the city the whole time?
No, but our offices reopened right after the 4th, so.
Oh, man. Ours did too, but I feel like nobody's going there.
It is quiet. People are finding reasons not to be here.
Yeah, for sure. I had the same thing. I thought everyone would come back to work. I was like, obviously everybody's going to come back to work. And then nobody wanted to come back to work.
Yeah, nobody wants to be here.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, so Kim, tell me why you wanted to be an agent. Like, how did you get into it? Like, how did you get there? What skills did you have that made you feel like this was the right career for you?
Yeah, so I always wanted to be a lawyer. And then I figured, what's the most exciting thing to do with a law degree? And I wanted to be in sports or entertainment. And always wanted to be a lawyer because even as a kid, I was always like my family spokesperson from a very young age for whatever reason. I can't believe they let me
You're
do
like
it.
Like advocating for the family?
Yeah. Yeah. So when there were wrongs, I would make them right. And they depended on me. I had that role. But when I was in law school, I took a sports law class and the professor was a woman who was an NFL agent. Kristen Kaliga. She was Doug Flutie's agent at the time. She worked with a lot of like Boston athletes, Red Sox players, Patriots players. And so that's kind of where the seed was planted that, okay, this is what I want to do.
And when you went into it, did you have a hard time breaking in? Like, you know, there aren't very many female agents, period. And being a football agent, you're like, you know, you are the token agent. So tell me about breaking into it.
Yeah, in a word, yes. Yeah. So it was very difficult and it was a long path to get to where I am. Let's see. I started off just doing it on my own. You know, I got certified. I decided this is what I want to pursue. I was practicing law in Boston. I was a litigator and was completely unfulfilled doing that job. And there was a moment in my life where I just thought, I want to pursue this dream. I'm not going to wait any longer. So I went, I got certified, passed the test, but then it's like, okay, now what?
Oh, you have to pass the test to be an agent?
Yes, for the NFL.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, all right. Not for a regular agent.
Well, they've changed it now. The NBA has a test too.
Okay. What's the test say?
It's like, okay, it sounds easy because it's an open book, multiple choice test, but they do throw curveballs. It's basically on the CBA. Okay. It's a timed test. Yeah. You either need a master's degree or a law degree too.
Really?
Yes. Yep. Or you have to prove 7 years, I think, of negotiation experience.
Huh.
Yep.
So I couldn't be an NFL agent because I don't have a master's degree or a law degree. I'd have to prove that I have 7 years negotiation.
Yes.
Huh. Yep. That's interesting. Okay.
The only other exception is former players as well.
I wouldn't qualify there.
No. So you take the test and get certified. Okay, great. But now what? There's like hundreds of agents and only a few have most of the clients. So I had little business cards made up with my Boston address. And my first client was a running back from Bryant University, which
okay.
is a business school in Rhode Island.
Sure.
So bless his heart, he trusted me. He was the first one to give me a chance. And, you know, it was a struggle. I mean, it's hard. So I was still practicing law full time because I wasn't making any money as an agent.
Of course.
So just doing it on weekends and take vacation time to go to the combine and whatnot.
And you were trying to land him on an NFL team.
Correct. Yes. Which was a difficult task.
Yeah. And so was it successful? Like, did he get a gig?
No. The next client I got, he got a tryout, a rookie minicamp tryout, but ultimately didn't make the team. He was another guy from Massachusetts, was the quarterback at Duke, transitioned to the safety position. And it was just a great learning experience because those are the guys you really cut your teeth on and have to go out, roll up your sleeves and work hard for. So.
It's interesting too, because in being a football agent or a sports agent versus a media agent, they either make the team or they don't. Like there's no amount of, I think, cajoling or greasing of the skids that you can do. Like if you're not running, you know, if you're not doing well at the combine on the field, your chances are, you know, it seems, at least from the outside, it seems to me to be far more quant driven, which is like you either have the build, the body, the plays, the speed, whatever, versus, you know, the agents that I deal with all the time, it's all nuanced, right? It's all packaging and perception. And so tell me a little bit about that. Like, what is the role of an agent when you're really looking to get someone a slot on a team because of their, you know, frankly, their physical ability or their game sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, there are certain metrics that teams are going to look at. They're going to look at your game film, and they're going to look at how you perform in certain drills and basically make a decision based off of that. I think an agent's role is sometimes when it's close, there's two guys that are similar in a skill set, kind of pushing the envelope based on character, if you can speak to a certain player's character or kind of differentiate them from another player that's perceived to be an equal and kind of try and push them in front. But it's like you said, at the end of the day, there's a lot of dishonest agents that will say, I can get you on a team, I can get you drafted to this team. And that's just not true. It's not true at all.
And how do you deal with, okay, so I have a bunch of questions for you. So how do you, you know, in the case where, who do you connect with? Who do you connect with in the football operation? Like, are you dealing with the actual coaching staff, or do they have, do you plug into, is there like a, who's the person you plug into?
It's more so it would be on the personnel side, like the GM, the directors of player personnel, and then you negotiate the contract with like the football administration guys.
Got it. And did you feel like being a woman ever gave you an advantage in those? Like, I'm assuming 99.95% of those people, if not 100%, are men.
Yeah, but you know what? It's interesting because the first major deal I did was for Geno Smith, who was the starting quarterback for the Jets at the time. And my counterpart at the Jets was a woman who was like in her 30s. So it was just, you know, unique because it would have been unheard of like 10 years prior. But for the most part, they are men. I mean, I think it's a little disarming for the men a little bit. So I guess in that respect, it could be an advantage.
Yeah, I think it's hard. Sometimes people always assume that being a woman in business or being a woman in male dominated fields, it's like, is so negative. Like, it's such a disadvantage. And I'm like, you know what? Sometimes it's a little bit refreshing to have somebody different, a different type of person to talk to. And it just happened to be different because of your gender or your personality. But I don't think it's all negative. I actually think, you know, it's so funny. We're in the middle of a negotiation now. And I can even remember like our first show on Comedy Central. Like, it was like a British guy, me, and a gay woman and a black woman were like putting on, doing the negotiation, making this entire show happen, which is not what people would have expected, but it was great because it was just all different people and all different types of perspective.
Right. No, I agree. And I think if you can stand out in a competitive business any way possible, that's an advantage. So,
and how do you use that? Like, when you're out pitching athletes and players, like, how do you shove you are a diminutive woman. How do you push your way to the front of the line?
I think a lot of my guys actually find it funny. I think Juju recently was like talking to someone describing me before I got there. And he was like, listen, my agent's really small, but she's tough. She's really tough. So don't go by like how small she is when she walks in the room. Yep. You know, all the guys have a strong female in their lives, I've found, whether it's a mom, a sister, a grandmother, or a wife, whatever the case may be. And so I relate to them on that level. And then with whoever their family member is in their life. So with the moms, it's great because we talk differently to each other than I think the male agents would with the moms.
Yeah, it's almost like I think alpha men are sometimes more comfortable actually around women, being surrounded by strong, smart women. It actually is an accelerant for them versus there would be so much more clashing if there were a strong, smart male. And I think sometimes it's all chemistry, like in your world, in my world, where anywhere you're dealing with talent, I think it's a game of chemistry, and chemistry comes from all different, you know, is driven by all different things. Who do you like hang around with? Like, is it hard for you to have friends? Like, I find in business, I have a really, like, I have a women's mafia. Like, I've got a pack of girlfriends business girlfriends who I'm thick with, but mostly my friends are guys. Like, how do you think about that? Like, who are, what do your friends look like at work?
So we have at Rock, everyone gets an agent, assigned an agent, or the agent recruits the player, and then they get assigned a day-to-day manager. And it just so happens to be most of the managers at Rock are women. So I hang out with them a lot of the time. They're my little group. They're my trusted sidekicks that I travel with. And so it works out great in that sense. But that being said, on the agent side, they're all men. I'm the only woman. So, and they're all my friends. The guys are all my friends, and we hang out, and it's just fine. And like you said, I end up being with men more likely than not. And it's cool. It works out fine. We all get along. So
that's great. I love it. I love guys. I mean, I think it's fun to like, I actually think it's fun to have a foot in both worlds because it just makes things interesting and funny and different perspectives.
Yeah. And they like to get my perspective on relationships and stuff. Yeah. So it's great. Yeah.
Okay, so tell me, what do you see happening? So Saquon is your big client. Like, tell me about the ride with Saquon. Like, how did you win him? How did you get him to, like, tell me about that process.
So it was a pretty cool process. I was actually at the Rose Bowl recruiting Juju Smith-Schuster, and they were playing Penn State. And watching that game, I was like, okay, Saquon Barkley is amazing. I mean, he lit up the field. You couldn't, like, not pay attention to him. So I was lucky I signed Juju, but right after I'm like, okay, Saquon is my priority in this draft class. And I pretty much just went after Saquon. And I think because we had already signed Todd Gurley, Leonard Fournette, it was sort of, it made the door opening to Saquon easier for him to sit down with us and have the conversation. So I just reached out and he said, you know, reach out to my mom and we'll set up a meeting. We did that. And all I did was recruit Saquon that year. And it's just been amazing to watch him go from a young college student in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, to New York City, the bright lights. He was a kid eating like burgers and lemonade with me. Now we're like going to dinner in Beverly Hills. He's ordering like fancy red wine. So it's been though so rewarding to watch that transformation.
And what's your process? Like when you seem like you could be obsessive, like when you were like, all I wanted was Saquon. Like we have a lot of people who are in the middle of their careers or at the beginning of their careers who are listening to this podcast. Like tell your method. Like what is the method? What's the Kim method?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of agents just try and sign multiple players because some of them have the directive to go out and, you know, it's volume, sign as many players as possible. And I am lucky that here it's actually the opposite. They'd rather have just a couple of really elite players on our roster. So I could, one, tell Saquon, you will be the only running back in this draft that all of Rock Nation works with. And that goes a long way because most agencies aren't willing to make that concession. And then again, because I could do that, just donating all of my time, dedicating all of my time to recruiting him, having him get to know me, get to know the agency, what we do. And it's a relationship business. So building trust with him and his family, I think, was the key. And again, a lot of agents aren't willing to make those sacrifices to spend all that time on one player.
What do you think the worst qualities of agents, like the worst agents you know, like what are there? I mean, I could have a whole episode on that.
Where does the list start? I think it's the ones who are just dishonest and say things like, oh, I have the best relationships in the league. I can get you drafted here. That's just not true. It's always going to be based on your skills. An agent's not going to move the dial that much. Or just really, it's been like a race to the bottom lately with the agent world. People who are willing to do deals for a very small percentage, but you get what you pay for in life, I believe. And so you've got to be, the guys should be wary of those kinds of agents. Just the ones who are just not honest.
And is there a lot of like backstabbing and jockeying amongst the agents? Like, do you have to get in the mud?
Yeah. I mean, we try and stay above the fray. Our motto is like, just keep positive recruiting, not to do negative recruiting. Just talk about what we've done and our accomplishments instead of bashing other people. But it's inevitable because you get the call, you'll be recruiting and the family member will call or the player will call and say, hey, I heard this. So-and-so said this. Is it true? And so then you've got to, and it always happens, especially at Rock Nation, for whatever reason, we have this giant target on our backs. They love to like join forces even to attack us.
Huh. So. Why is that? Is it because you're not solely football or is it?
I think because like the business model is really unique. It's a huge company, but the business model is to work as a boutique agency. And there's not another agency doing that right now. And then I think it's just like the power of Jay-Z, the culture behind him. No one can really replicate that. And I think there's a fear that they just can't compete with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do you, like, how do you, what do you do when, let's say Saquon, like, wasn't showing up on the field? Like, how do you deal with a tough, I don't know if you call them clients, but like, how do you deal with a tough partner where they're out of shape, they're not putting in the work ethic, they're going out too much, they're like getting in trouble? Like, what's your role? How do you deal with that? What's your process there?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be honest. You can't tell people what they want to hear. You have to tell them what they need to hear if they want to be successful. So you have to be willing to have those hard conversations and figure out, like, what's going on? Why are you not playing well? Is it because you're out of shape? You're not putting the time in? Is there an injury that you have that you're not dealing with? You've got to be willing to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're not really, you're doing a disservice to the client.
And what would your advice be to women or anybody like you who wants to break in to be an agent and, you know, wants to have a career like yours? Like, what are the things you feel like you've done well that have made you so successful?
I think you have to be resilient, whether man, woman, whoever you are, to be in this business and to be successful. You have to, because there were times I wanted to quit and give up because, I mean, I wasn't making any money doing it. Yeah. And it's expensive to be an agent. You have to pay a yearly fee, you have to keep insurance, and then to go out and recruit players, so you might train, you've got to pay for the training costs, the housing. So it's a lot, and to take that on, to continue to incur that with maybe no sign of a return on your investment in the end, it's tough. So you have to be resilient and just believe that if you keep going, that good things will happen, and just stay the course.
Awesome. Kim, thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you. I've been a huge fan of yours, Erica, and I just want to share a quick story. When you were named CEO at Barstool, you actually was announced right outside of our offices. Rock Nation was in Times Square.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I remember watching that.
Oh my God, that video. I had no idea what I was getting into. I literally was like, what is happening here? But I can't wait to meet you in person. We'll have to get together.
Absolutely.
Let's awesome. All right. That. Thanks for doing this, Kim. I appreciate it. And good luck this. Oh, Kim, last question for you. Do you think there's going to be an NFL season?
I think it will start. Whether it finishes and we have a full 16 games is the big question mark. So fingers crossed, but I'm hoping for the best.
Okay, cool. Me too. Awesome. Thank you, Kim, so much.
Thank you, Erica. Take care.
One thing I've been thinking about with my running club is that I'm actually deeply suspicious that the only reason the majority of people send me their Instagram posts of them running is to get hit on by other people who follow me. I think the run club is secretly a dating club, which is that's my own personal suspicion. So to that end, I don't think these people are trying to have kids, but if they are, everyone should know that 1 in 7 couples experience infertility, and half of all infertility cases, it's because the guy is infertile. It's not necessarily on the girl. So 10% of men are infertile. That's 1 in 10 men. Daddy is a company that makes essentially high-tech products that enable you to test your fertility at home. And they also want to make the conversation around fertility much more comfortable and normal. So what Daddy wants to do is to make fertility testing, sperm banking, as convenient, as cost-effective, and as comfortable as possible. So no longer does anyone listening to this or the future couples coming out of the Nardini Run Club, if they're having infertility, they don't have to go to a sperm bank. They don't have to masturbate in uncomfortable places. That is a huge win. Or wait weeks to receive results. What Daddy does is sends a kit to your house. You do your business. You can get your results within 24 hours of receiving your sample. The other thing is that infertility for anyone who has been through it is egregiously expensive. Like, I'm talking thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And what Daddy does is essentially gives you this at-home collection kit, a lab-tested fertility report, overnight shipping, and a free year of sperm storage, all for $199. And then after that, you can save your sperm if you want to have kids later on and you're worried about your fertility at a later time. You can save your sperm for $99 a year. So there's no hidden costs, there's no hidden fees. And their goal is to make basically infertility testing and sperm banking more accessible for everybody. So thankfully, the Daddy folks are huge fans of Barstool. They know there's a lot of people listening, watching to Barstool who are having sex, and maybe there's some of them who want to start a family. What they're doing is offering a limited time offer. So for anyone who goes to daddykit.com, that's daddikit.com, and you put code TOKEN50, you'll get $50 off your purchase. So if you want to see if you're infertile or not, or you want to bank some sperm, or you just want to see if it works, you can go to daddykit.com, daddikit.com, use code TOKEN50 and get yourself going today. All right, my one fucking good thing today is Kevin Clancy and John Feidelberg are launching an app, which is pretty awesome. I don't know if anybody's watched our Answer the Internet series. Essentially, Kevin and John have come up with the most ridiculous questions. It's kind of like, would you rather on steroids? They've made it into a card game, which sold out like crazy last holiday season. They've had countless celebrities and influencers and comedians to Barstool to go to play Answer the Internet. And today we're launching an app. So I think that's a big deal. I think people will love to play it. It can travel with you. You can play the game wherever you are with your friends. If you're running out of things to talk about, it's easy to kind of spark the conversation. And it's completely born out of the minds of Kevin and John, which I just think is part of the best, you know, are two of the best people we have at Barstool. And I love to see us innovating like this into taking ideas that come out of content and making them into applications or card games or you name it. So that's my one fucking good thing. One fucking good thing is obviously brought to life by High Noon. I love High Noon. I'm actually in South Carolina, and I saw, despite the social distancing, there were like guys on pedicabs all over Charleston last weekend handing out High Noon, which was awesome. And I was like, you should travel right up to the Northeast where there is a massive shortage of this stuff. High Noon's great and is a fucking good thing because it's real vodka and real juice. The only three things in it are vodka, juice, and sparkling water, which is pretty awesome. It's not a malt beverage, which I like. I actually can't stand a malt seltzer at this point. I'm all in on real vodka and real juice. My favorite flavor is still the peach, but you can get pineapple, black cherry, watermelon, lime, and grapefruit. They're rolling out new flavors all the time, and it's 100 calories, so why not? So that's one fucking good thing. All right, so that's it for today's episode. Big thanks to Audie and Kim for joining us. If you haven't already, subscribe to this podcast, leave us a rating, give us a review. I'm at EKA Nardini. Token CEO is on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and TikTok. We're trying to figure out reels. We'll see how that goes. And we'll see you back here next week.
Does the Tribe ad read still air tomorrow?
Why wouldn't it? Are they done?
Yeah.
Oh, we got fired by Tribe?
I don't know.
Oh my God. Wait, hold on. Tribe fired me?
Maybe it's because you couldn't say tincture.
Maybe it's because I can't say tincture. I got fired.
Not very tribe mentality of them to quit on us.
We gave them a whole segment, though, on what a tincture is.
I gave them, like, a 45-minute ad read and a word of the day. Fuckers. The fuck?